This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing Patrick Sullivan from the Lakeville Journal, who is going to talk about his time and experiences on Mount Riga, the tangled lines that he writes for the Lakeville Journal and the journal itself. Today is September 13th, 2001. This is Cycle 4, File 34. What is your full name?
Patrick L. Sullivan.
And what does the L stand for?
Lugubrious.
I can't spell that one. What is your birth date?
February 25th, 1962.
And your birthplace?
Bronxville, New York.
And how did you come to this area?
My family has a camp on the lower lake on Mount Riga. The lower lake is South Pond on a map.
That's the one with the dam?
Yes.
Okay. When you say a small child, can you give me an approximate year? Mid-60s?
Well, I was on the mountain as an infant.
Okay, that's great. That's great. Now, you were telling me something about the farmhouse, and that's your family mountain home.
Yeah.
Tell me a bit about that, please.
Well, it's a... the main part of it is old and drafty and home to a diverse collection of mice and things. But and then there's an addition to it called the annex that my grandfather and his brother built sometime prior to my arrival in the world. And so the net, and then there's a deck running around it that my grandmother had built in the 80s. The entire effect is eclectic, architecturally speaking.
Good word.
It was originally, I'm a little fuzzy on the details, but my grandfather and Frank Collin and his brother Pat bought it or got it somehow, and as the succeeding generations developed, it became too small to accommodate two or three families. When I was a little kid, we'd have me and my brother and my parents, and then my uncle Frank, Frank Sr.'s son, and his wife Jane, and their three boys who were about the same age as me and my brother. And we'd all be in the farmhouse at the same time, sometimes with some other cousins too. And as a kid, you don't really notice these things, but as an adult, I think back on that, and I think it must have been close to intolerable in terms of being all crammed together in a space
Sure.
Trying to herd cats with the kids and keep everybody entertained and all of that. So so one set of cousins set up a camp. That's the Dwight Collins. That's Pat's son. And then Pat's daughter, Betsy, and her husband, Alan Clutchman, remodeled the old barn that we were forbidden to play in because it had rusty farm implements in it and a fire engine. And of course that meant that we went and played with it in it every opportunity. They renovated that and then built a silo next to it with bedrooms.
And it's really a silo.
It really is.
Yeah.
And so when you go up to that part of Mount Riga, you're in the extended Collin family territory. So there's the three camps, us, the Clutchman, the barn silo, and then the Dwight Collin camp, which started out as a shed and has pupped since with the sleeping cabins and stuff.
That surprised me going up on the mountain, that there would be a main cabin and then there'd be these sleeping cabins. That intrigued me.
Well, if you're on the lake making your way west towards the New York line, and you can see the whole Wells family compound, and especially when the, either in the spring or in the fall, when the leaves are down, every year I go, oh,
yeah,
there's another one back there.
Yeah.
It's just, it seems like there's dozens.
Oh, sure.
It must drive the assessor crazy.
Oh, my. You were telling me about this mosquito swarm.
Oh, yeah. I'm guessing I was 8 or 10 or something. I was the oldest of the batch of cousins. And we were in a room that we called the dormitory. And, you know, there were probably half a dozen of us at any rate had been sent up there to go to bed while the adults did their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a hot summer night. And I woke up and something was going on. And suddenly the adults were in the room and there was citronella candles and fly spray and all this stuff. And there was this black cloud of what turned out to be mosquitoes that was just shifting and moving around the way birds do when they, you know, a big flock of birds will kind of morpho, fold over itself. It was like that. It was really weird.
Oh,
and they rushed us all out of the dormitory to some other area, which was presumably less mosquito-y. And I think the whole, it seemed like it took forever at the time, but I think the whole thing probably took 5 minutes. But it was just this freak swarm of mosquitoes.
Oh, my.
And I don't recall anybody, you know, getting seriously bit or, you know, any kind of medical problem. It was just strange and disturbing.
Well, speaking of medical, your brother Brendan had a fall.
Yes. The top floor of the silo, that became where all the kids went to sleep. And there's kind of a narrow platform about 3 or 4 feet wide that runs around the inside of the top of the silo so you can't stand on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was railed off, and there's a ladder that's probably 12 feet. And we just arrange ourselves around the platform in sleeping bags. And, you know, it meant if you had to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, you had to climb over Dave and Michael and Rip and whoever, and then make your way down the ladder and so on. And my brother had a sleepwalking problem.
Ooh.
And so the prevailing theory afterwards was that he'd been sleepwalking, but whatever it was, he fell down the ladder. And I'm not even sure if he had anything to do with the ladder. He may have just gone straight over. Anyway, there was this big hubbub, and they rigged up a backboard out of a piece of plywood, strapped him down with bungee cords or something, and loaded him into the Clutchmans always had those old Jeep, I guess they were Wagoneers, the ones with the fake wood paneling on them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so loaded him into one of those, took him over to Sharon Hospital. And he was okay, but it was a little bit
traumatic.
Scary.
Now, as an adult, how much time do you get to spend up there? All of the summer or a month or?
My family, the Mary Sullivan, the Mary Colin Sullivans, which at the moment is just me and Mom, we share it with her brother, the late Frank Colin Jr., with his three boys.
It's Frank Allen?
Frank Colin Jr.
Colin, that's what I'm
And So my cousins, Dan, Sam, and Charlie. Dan lives in Seattle, and Sam lives in Los Angeles, and Paris. He's very cosmopolitan. And so we don't see much of them. So it's mostly me and Mom, and then Charlie and his family. Charlie lives, they live in West Hartford. So typically the way it works is we get it opened up in May sometime. Lots of sweeping, lots of dead mice. Mm-hmm. We have to get the generator out for water. And I usually do that, or at least the initial stages of that, just because I'm here and mm-hmm. Charlie's not. And then usually concede Memorial Day to the West Hartford group. Although that dynamic is changing because he's got kids in college now, and they're all older, and they have all kinds of activities, and yep. I think managing, I think getting that group on the road as a single unit is has become progressively difficult. but generally speaking, I just go ahead and Charlie and them can have the Memorial Day holiday. And then June's more or less up for grabs. We just coordinate. And then for the major summer months, traditionally Charlie and them take July and Mom and I take August. This year we switched. And because the Charlie's kids had summer school, which took place during July, mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. it just made sense to switch it around. And this year I can't complain at all because I was up there pretty much nonstop from the second week of June all the way to August 1st.
Oh, good.
So I had a big, long stretch of time, most of which there wasn't anybody around, which is perfect.
Yeah.
There's just enough. If you go to the southwestern corner of the house or the deck, you get just enough cell phone signal from Millerton to know somebody's trying to get you, but not enough to do anything about it.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
Now, seeing as how you had such a long period up there, what do you like best about being on the mountain?
Quiet and stillness. And not having to... because there's no electricity, mm-hmm. and because the cell phone works at best
sort
sporadically,
of. Uh-huh.
It only takes a day or two to shift into a completely different mode mm-hmm. that is mm-hmm. not contaminated by a constant barrage of messages, most of them irrelevant and unwanted, from various items of technology. And when I'm, just living normally in my apartment in Lakeville, I take those things for granted, and I don't really think about them. But when you're up on the mountain, it becomes, I don't know why it surprises me, but it does every year. When you're up on the mountain, I realize just how much time I spend looking at screens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very conscious of it, and I make an effort not to look at screens. So if I'm complaining about it, what is the generation that has never not had a cell phone? Mm-hmm. What's happening to their brain?
Oh, yeah. Well, I know when I've been up there, and I've only been up there, a little bit, but it's so peaceful.
Yeah.
And it's so quiet, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful spot. I envy you tremendously. Is there anything that you don't like when you're up on the mountain? The dead mice.
No, the dead mice are kind of are par for the course. It's just one of those things you have to deal with. Even though we have a good one, and we make an effort to keep it clean, I have to say, I am not a huge fan of the outhouse.
I can understand that.
Part of it is because, as a child, my other grandmother used to read me Rikki Tikki Tavi. So somewhere in the back of my mind, there's this sort of atavistic fear that there's a cobra down there, and it's going to bite me when I'm in a particularly vulnerable position. There's, as far as I know, no snake with any sense would hang out under there, but you never know.
I should tell you about the outhouse that I used in England, and I didn't use it because there was a snake coiled around the bottom of it. Anyway, when you were a child, you said there were two rules that were enforced. One was about lighting, and the other was about swimming.
Right. Children were not to handle the kerosene lamps, period. For the obvious reasons that it's
dangerous.
Pretty easy to knock one over and set the joint on fire. And if that place went on fire, it would be over in about 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then the other one was swimming, which was the children are not allowed to swim at the lake without an adult present. And so the classic example of that, I don't personally remember this, but my mother does. We were up there with the Colin cousins, so there were five of us boys, and my mother and her sister-in-law, Jane, and it was one of those mornings where everything was, you know, a big bustle and whatever, and finally they said, okay, all you kids go down to the lake and wait for us. So I was, you know, again, probably 10, and the youngest was Charlie, who was probably 4 or something. And so anyway, we all trooped down to the lake. And whatever it was, it took longer than they thought to get it together up top. And so it was probably 45 minutes to an hour or something before Mom and Jane came down to the dam. And at which point they found me standing in front of my brother and the three Colin boys sitting on the the spillway, and I was standing in front of them basically saying, no, you can't go in the water until the adults come. And I was, you know, and there it was.
But that's
they thought it was adorable.
Well, naturally, you're enforcing the adult regulations.
Yeah.
Now, we've just gone through Labor Day, and there are some special activities on Labor Day up on the mountain.
Right. There is a tennis tournament, mixed doubles. There are two clay tennis courts up there. And so there's... it's a fairly big deal. It is a big deal.
Yes, it is.
I got roped into playing in it one year, and the mixed goes as far as it can, but sometimes you just can't avoid having two men or two women.
Mm-hmm.
But they try to weed that out in the earlier brackets. So I was paired with my Uncle Frank, and neither one of us could even spell tennis, much less play it. So I do remember playing. The only shot I had any success with, meaning could get over the net, was a backhand baseline shot that looked like it was going to go out and then would die at the last second. And I did that 4 or 5 times, much to the irritation of our opponent, because otherwise neither one of us could do anything. We couldn't serve. We couldn't... return anything that came over the net with any kind of speed. So we did our bit. We got wiped out fast and subsided gracefully and retired a game and popular loser. But my mother, who was an avid tennis player back in the day, she won it once.
Ooh.
I forget who her partner was. I haven't seen it so much lately, but there used to be some skullduggery in the matchups. Some camps, not the Colin camps, but some camps would invite guests.
Ooh.
Who, for the lovely Labor Day weekend, who just happened to be
good tennis players.
Really good tennis players. I always wondered about those conversations. Why don't you come up for Labor Day? Yeah, it's really nice. It's relaxing. The lake is beautiful. Oh, and there's this tennis tournament. And and I am reliably informed that at certain times, sums of money have changed hands depending on the outcome.
Ooh.
And I,
sports betting in its infancy.
Well, I actually suggested it this year because I'm not really much of a tennis fan. You want to get
that? No.
Okay. I'm not really much of a tennis fan, and I know enough about it to appreciate it. But
yeah,
10 or 15 minutes of tennis lasts me a year.
Yeah.
And so I said in a kind of offhand way of Labor Day this year down at the town courts that some form of gambling would increase spectator interest. Because most of the spectators were sitting around shooting the breeze and going, yeah. And I don't think they're a whole hell of a lot more interested than I am, frankly. And Quad Conquest, who was organizing the thing with Tom Vail this year.
Who?
His name is Quad. His name is Arthur Wellington Conquest IV, known as Quad.
Okay.
and Quad said, oh yeah, we talked about that, and maybe next year, maybe we have an app. He knows about apps. Okay. So who knows, maybe this will occur. But anyway, the tennis tournament runs over the 3 days, and unless it rains, this year. The Sunday matches were all rained out, and so in the past, sometimes they've gone and finagled their way into Hotchkiss, which I don't think was possible this year because of pandemic stuff.
Yeah.
But Quad lives right down the street from the town courts, so he had that on his mind. So bright and early Labor Day morning, a mob of Mount Riga people descended on the town courts.
Where are the town courts?
On Petit Street.
Oh, yes.
There's three.
Yes, yes. My husband used to play on them.
Hard surface.
Whatever. Yeah, I'm not a tennis player.
Composite stages. And with a sign that says, no consecutive hours, which was obviously completely ignored. Mm-hmm. And so I was waiting for some regular town people to come by and say, hey.
Yeah, but nobody did.
And they would have been greatly outnumbered. So the so they got all the Sunday matches done, and then by that time, mid-afternoon, it had dried out enough. Mm-hmm. Up top, that they were able to play the final up there. I forget who won.
Good. Did you have a picnic this year?
We did not. We had sort of a picnic. Mm-hmm. Below the dam, across the road, there is an old iron furnace, which everybody calls the forge, which is wrong.
It isn't.
No. And I keep telling you, a furnace is where you make the iron. A forge is where you turn the iron into stuff. like horseshoes,
yep,
or cannons, or really sturdy bobby pins, or something. But this is not a forge. And every year I say this, and every year I am ignored. So, this
but
year...
But you are historically correct.
I know I am. That's why I keep saying it. But... anyway.
Is that where you have the picnic?
Yeah, and usually it's a kind of a potluck deal, and there's a band, and a keg of beer, and whatever.
Okay.
This year, I didn't really follow the logic of this. This year it was decided it was, because of the pandemic, it was too risky to have the full blown affair. So instead, we had at 6:30 my cousin Michael and his wife Dee Dee Dresser, who was Jim Dresser's sister. they renewed their wedding vows, which was nice. And then there was desserts. It was a potluck dessert thing.
Huh.
But there was still, there wasn't a keg of beer, but there was lots of wine and soft drinks and coffee. And you had the same number of people,
yeah,
that would come to the other thing. And as far as I know, they stayed for about the same amount of time.
Well, they tried.
So.
No, what was the big deal? Yeah.
So I don't understand what that was about, unless they thought that the band members were super spreaders. It didn't make any sense to me, but...
that's the way it was.
But I rarely stay at these things very long anyway, so I did my thing and got out. Plus, because it had been raining so much, and that's a low spot.
Yeah.
It
would be marshy.
A lot of wet feet.
Ah, bad. Oh, bad. All right, now we're going to move on to your fishing stories, Tangled Lines. And I understand that that's something that you've done early in your career. When did the fishing stories start?
The Albuquerque Tribune, which was an evening Scripps Howard paper. It was one of the last evening newspapers in the United States. So this is in the mid-90s. I'm a little fuzzy, exactly.
That's all right.
I basically lived on beer then. Did you know alcohol is a food? It is. And,
yes, it's made with malt. and malt comes from grain. Oh, yes.
Yeah, full of electrolytes and stuff. Anyway, the Albuquerque Tribune had a fishing writer who either retired or got fired or left. Whatever reason, and they had a competition, and I was pretending to be a graduate student at the time, and but I had worked in a bookstore with another guy from the East who was also an avid trout fisherman, and we, a guy named Glenn May, and we had combined forces to go on and arrange to have the same days off, so we'd disappear and go up into northern New Mexico and fish, which is one of the great unsung trout fishing places in the world. And so Glenn and I both submitted pieces to the Tribune.
What was his name?
Glenn May. Two N's in Glenn. From Delaware somewhere. And Glenn ended up getting the gig, but that wasn't until a couple of years later. So so they kind of parceled it out between me and Glenn and a third guy. And so every once in a while I'd get a phone call from the Trib and they'd say, can you write us a fishing column for this date?
Mm-hmm.
And sure. And so I think all told I probably had 4 or 5 published. And then, I don't know, it fizzled out like things do, but that's where I got started with it. And then I was up here, and I was working at Mountainside, like the Hair Club for Men guy, before I was an employee, I was a customer. And so I had gone through treatment and the transition program and everything, and after I got a year sober, they put me on the payroll. And I met Ruth Epstein, who at the time was the editor of the journal, at that Tri-State Trade Fair thing they used to have down at the high school. And I said, you know, I have some experience, blah, blah, blah. She said, well, write something and send it in. Then I forgot about it. Then the management shifted around at the journal and whatever, and I was ready, kind of ready to get out of Mountainside anyway, and I ran into, I forget who I ran into. It was either Cynthia or Janet, and I wrote them a fishing column, and they liked it, and they paid me, you know,
money,
$35 for it.
Ooh.
So, and then when I left Mountainside, I stupidly cashed in my 401k, and so I had some walking around money, and I had an old buddy with me. This was in 2004, and an old buddy with me who was having some weird medical thing. He's a doctor, and he couldn't figure it out, so he was going to all his doctor friends in New York, and they couldn't figure it out either, and so... And in between bouts of not being able to figure it out, he'd have long 2-3 week layovers. And I said, well, why don't you just come hang out with me? So we spent the summer bouncing between Mount Riga and our cabin in Phoenicia, New York. And the deal was that I would teach him fly fishing and he would handle the cooking and we'd split the groceries. And this was an extremely pleasant summer. And then at the end of it, it occurred to me that this couldn't go on forever and I better get a job. And right around that time, the guy at the Journal who covered Kent, Sharon, and sports quit rather abruptly. And over that summer, I had done a couple of freelance things here and there. And so Cynthia called me up and said, do you want the full-time job? And if I'd been honest, I would have said, no, I would prefer to live a life of leisure as a moneyed trout bum. But that was not an option. So I said yes, throwing caution to the wind. I said yes. And so that began my first stint at the Journal. And since I was the sports desk, I said, why don't I write a semi-regular fishing column? And they said, okay. And I wanted to call it Tangled Lines and a Broken Heart. And Cynthia said, that sounds too much like a country song. And I said, yeah, that's why I said it. And they said, no, Tangled Lines. All right.
Now, you said that you have a formula for writing it.
Yeah.
Is this a trade secret? Or?
No. It's obvious to anybody who reads the thing. You start out with some technical thing, such as, you know, it was cold and miserable, but I went anyway, mm-hmm. because I was bored and I can't stand basketball on TV or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I throw in a little bit of narration, add some technical details, deep stuff like tungsten head, nymphs tied on jig hooks, or the superior kind of fluorocarbon tippet, and that's just a proof to the actual anglers that I know
what you're talking
something
about.
About what I'm talking about. And then I throw in a couple of jokes, usually self-deprecating, and then some kind of zinger to wrap it up.
Excellent.
And there, quite often the call would come on our old schedule when we printed the paper on site at the old Bissell Street office. Tuesday was, well, Wednesday morning was when it was the absolute drop dead. And quite often on late Tuesday afternoon or even early Wednesday morning, the cry would go up, "We have a hole on the sports page. Can you write a Tangled?" And I say, "Yeah." And they said, "Well, how long will that take you?" And I said, "About 15 minutes." And that's what it was.
Then you never worked at the Journal when it was at the Holly Manufacturing?
No.
Okay, so you would have... Well, the Bissell thing happened in 82, I think. What's the hierarchy at the paper?
Janet is the publisher and boss of bosses.
Mm-hmm.
Cynthia is the main capo.
The main what?
Capo.
That's what I thought you said.
Well, I'm using an organized crime metaphor,
yeah,
but
yeah.
This would be more disorganized crime. But, and crime is a stretch. Never mind. Cynthia is the executive editor and one of the primary writers.
Yes.
James Clark is the production guy.
Is that Clark with an E?
No.
Okay. And then there's you.
No. Then there's Alex Wilburn is the... forget what he's called. He's the associate editor, I think. But Alex does the bulk of the layouts. Alex and James work very closely together, but James has the other paper to produce, and the Millerton paper, and then whatever, the Compass, and then whatever supplements we're doing. So
yeah.
Alex does the bulk of the layout. And
what
stuff.
Is Alex's last name?
Wilburn.
Wilbur?
Burn.
Burn.
B-U-R-N. And then there's me. Mm-hmm. I'm the only full-time reporter at the moment. And then we have a group of... there's another young woman named Courtney something who helps Alex. And... I think she's a part-timer. I think Alex is a part-timer, too. I really don't know.
That's all right.
And then there's Leela Hawken, who's a freelance reporter. Deborah somebody, who's another freelancer. Leela also doubles as a copy editor, but we all do.
Mm-hmm.
That's in normal times. When we're all in the office on Monday and Tuesday. So everybody reads everything. And proofreads it and then also looks for other, you know, there's proofreading in terms of spelling mistakes,
yep,
and
yep.
that kind of thing. And then there's copy editing, which is where you go, wait a minute, this makes no sense. And so it's the lines of the chain of command gets a little blurry.
It gets a little fuzzy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but basically, it's everybody pitches it, is what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
Pandemic era, hardly anybody's in the office, and I mean, I've only been there half a dozen times since this thing started.
Yeah.
And and I'm not. I think that shifts the burden of the copy editing to Janet and Cynthia and Alex,
okay.
basically.
Do you have routine sources of information that you check?
Yeah. The great advantage to local reporting is that the further down the political food chain you go, mm-hmm. the easier it is to get people. So I can get the first selectman on the phone pretty quick. I can get the state representative or state senator on the phone pretty quick. I can get the chairman of the Board of Ed or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Frequently things that come out in, say, a school board meeting or something, they're frequently confusing. And there's a lot of it, and
yeah.
so I can, if there's a a question that needs to be cleared up before I can write intelligently about it and accurately about it. I can find out, and I can find out fast.
What is your current assignment as far as area?
I am the regional reporter, and then I cover Salisbury and Falls Village, and fishing, and anything else that comes up that nobody else can get to.
Now, you have summer interns, don't you?
Yes.
Tell me about the Bob Estabrook Award and what, how to pronounce the young lady's name.
Sadie... What was it? I think it's...
What?
I think it's Lighty.
Okay.
I think you pronounce the E, but I wouldn't swear to that.
Okay.
She was pretty good.
What was she good at?
Taking direction.
That's important.
And not freaking out when we told her things like, no, don't record the meeting on your hand computer, because then you have to, in lieu of taking notes, because then you have to listen to it again. Why would you want to do that? I mean, if you want to record it because you might miss something or you might be confused about something, you want to do that as a backup, knock yourself out. But you're far better off taking accurate notes at the time, and then if you're confused, ask the people then and there before they disappear.
Which is what I try to do when I'm doing the oral history.
Right.
Tell me the story about Sam Bradley.
Bradway.
I'm sorry?
Bradway.
Bradway, okay.
Smiling Sam. I met him when he won the superintendent's award in the 8th grade. When he was this quiet, bug-eyed little kid who didn't impress me as a towering personality at the time, but clearly intelligent, but very soft-spoken. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed him, and, okay, fine. Then he got to the high school, and I started hearing from some of the teachers that there was this kid who was pretty hot stuff. And I forget exactly how it came about. I think I ran into him somewhere, and I said, Sam, you should do an internship with us. And he replied diffidently, okay. So Sam ended up interning with us all 4 years of high school, and by the end of it, he was, when he had a driver's license, and was mobile, we were paying him. He went on the payroll, and that might have even extended into the first summer of college. He ended up at American University. And so one time, it was when the Amesville Bridge was closed for the umpty-umpth time, but this time it was closed for good. Mm-hmm. They have to replace it, blah, blah, blah. So Cynthia says, go around, take Sam and go around to the businesses in Falls Village and ask them how the bridge is affecting their business. Which is one of those things you think of and then examine it a little closer and say, what? That's kind of goofy, isn't it? But nonetheless, that was the gig, and editors will be editors. So it was a learning opportunity. So I said, come on, Sam, we're going to go waste a lot of time doing this dopey thing. So we went down, and I hung out. You know, we went. There was a wine place on Route 7, which is now closed.
Yep.
And then there was Toy Makers, which is now sort of closed or reopened under a different scheme. And I forget.
Jacob's Garage?
Jacob's Garage. We may have gone to the Falls Village Inn. I can't remember exactly.
That's enough.
But we did what we could. And I think Mike Hodgkins was running the gas station then in the deli. So we probably went and did him. Anyway, I hung back and took pictures and let Sam do the interviewing. Mm-hmm. So we did the best we could with what we had, which, you know, is kind of not the most promising topic. And we went back, and because I keep urging the interns to type up their notes immediately before they forget what they mean or they can't read them or whatever. Just type it up while it's fresh. So type it up, and Sam said, why don't I just write it? I said, that's fine, if you want to just cut to the chase, do it that way. So Sam clacked away, and I did something else, and then after a while, he was ready to go, and he said, let me, so he emailed it over to me, and I put it in a text document on my computer, and it was exactly what you'd get from somebody who's described as a precocious sophomore. So it started out with one of those passive voice, snarky things, like, you would think that if the bridge was closed, that like that. So I said, Sam, come here. Let me show you how to do this. So I highlighted everything except the date line, Falls Village in caps, and then the end dash. I highlighted everything and hit the delete. Boom, it all disappeared. Now we start. And so I just took him through it in Associated Press style.
Yeah.
Pyramid construction. Yeah. This was a perfect opportunity to do that. And I took him through it, and he paid attention. And then I stuck both our names on it and sent it. Ah. A couple days later, I'm in the office for whatever reason, and Sam's working on something for Cynthia, and I look over his shoulder, and he's doing it exactly the way I showed him how to do it. You only have to tell this kid once.
Oh, that's wonderful. And it's rare.
And he absorbed it. And yeah, it is rare. And the thing that impressed me and continues to impress me about Sam is that well, he didn't complain about it. Probably because he sensed that the market for this would be sluggish or non-existent. Mm-hmm. So he's prudent.
Yes.
And he didn't. Not only did he not complain about it, but when I worked with him again on another thing, maybe a year later or something, I said, Sam, you know the rules for how to do this. So if you want to stretch them or even break them, go ahead. And he goes, I already did.
Okay.
So I said, all right. And, you know, I looked at what he'd written. I said, yeah, that you can do. You can get away with that.
Yeah.
A rookie cannot. But
you have to have the basics before you can do a little more exploration.
The other great intern was Mari, M-A-R-I, Cullerton.
Culligan?
Cullerton.
How do you spell that one?
C-U-L-L-E-R-T-O-N. Who is one of triplets.
Male or female?
Female. All equally brilliant. And Mari came to us. The FFA, which is Future Farmers of America, but you can't call them that anymore because that's not what they are or something. Anyway, I made that mistake once and was corrected none too gently. And so the FFA at Housatonic Valley Regional High School has among its officers a reporter. And so for the last, I don't know, 18 years or however long I've been doing this, I have worked with the FFA reporter with the idea of teaching them something about the newspaper business and newspaper writing and so on. And it's been a decidedly mixed bag. Some of them are good, some of them aren't. Some of them took it seriously, some of them didn't. Mari Cullerton took it seriously from the get-go, and like Sam, is one of these people who you only have to show her once, and she gets it. And Mari was so good that I think she was still in high school and we were paying her as a freelancer. And she is now doing great things, although what exactly I can't tell you, but she went on to the University of Connecticut and is probably a graduate student somewhere.
Now, I'd like to go back a bit to this Salisbury Rotary Club's Robert Estabrook Intern Award. What's the basis for it? What are the requirements for her to get an award like this? Do you know?
I don't really.
Okay, that's fine.
I think it... because I only see the interns when they're working with me.
Okay.
So over the 3 weeks that it's supposed to last, although it seems to last longer, Sadie was with us all summer. Over the 3 weeks it's supposed to last, they're supposed to get a taste of everything. And so I don't know how it works with the layout part of it and all of that. I do know that I suspect that the one of the main criteria is showing up and being on time and being willing to learn and work.
Okay. You've worked at the Journal for about 18 years?
I was trying to figure that out because I took a break from the Journal for about a year and a half. I was lured back to Mountainside with promise of great riches and incredible innovation in substance abuse treatment, and instead I got the second shift.
That's not what you wanted.
it was a mistake. And then Terry Cowgill left the Journal, and I came back.
What do you like best about your job? Other than it doesn't interfere with your fishing.
Oh, that's what I was going to say.
You see, I wrote down everything you said the last time.
Right. What's fun about it is I have a ringside seat for all these all the various dramas and comedies of small town life. And a great deal of it is local government reporting, town government reporting. And I, over the years, have gotten to see, a close-up view of how things work from the bottom up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I get to talk to people I wouldn't otherwise probably run into.
Mm-hmm.
All of those are also what I dislike about it, because these encounters are not always pleasant or productive.
Sounds like teaching.
Yeah, if you don't have a hide like a rhinoceros, mm-hmm. then you're in the wrong job here. And then there's the fact that I'm lucky to work with Janet and Cynthia. They don't fuss at me.
That's good.
Very much. Once in a while, they get a little fussy. And which means every once in a while I have to
straighten up and fly right.
Assert myself. And I might have to actually say, oh, sorry about that.
That helps.
But we have a good working relationship.
Good.
And everybody's very, again, because we're so small, everybody has to do some of everything.
Yeah.
And it's...
You work as a team.
It's relaxed, and it's a good place to work.
Couldn't be a better accolade.
Couldn't be a better accolade. Is there anything that I haven't covered that you would like to talk about before we close?
Can't think of anything.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Sure.